and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope you guys are having a wonderful day today. We actually have some pretty nice weather in Florida. It's not extremely hot yet. It's very sunny, nice out. It's supposed to be very warm tomorrow. I think they said with a heat index this Saturday, we're supposed to be looking, I think, 113 or 115 with the heat index. So that should be a lot of fun. A lot of people going to the beach and getting lots of natural vitamin D. But I have a special guest today. I asked my wife, Lana Brower, to join me on the show today. She's got a bunch of really good baby articles, advice, knowledge, wisdom, all kinds of stuff that she wants to share with you guys. So I figured I'd bring her in. We'd go over some regular topic stuff and then kind of go back and forth with her about a lot of different stuff that we've done and that she knows, because she knows it better even than I do, as far as with the birth of our first son, Hunter, who's 4 months old now. He's actually sleeping in the back room. He came over to the office today with her. So it should be a pretty exciting show for you guys today. Lana, how are you doing? Are you with us?
Doing well. Doing well. And do you want me to go ahead and start talking about babies, or do we want to start with something else?
Let me get into some current ones, and then we'll go back and forth on that, and then we'll go into some child stuff. So it should be a pretty good one. The first one that I wanted to address today was the fact that yesterday I talked about how the North Carolina schools are starting to actually ban teachers from using the word girl or boy, and they have to use all these other different words now. They can't refer to them as any type of gender-specific. We went off on it crazy, but now it's getting worse and worse. We see this in the school system. We see it at the college level now. Now, Princeton, the level of learning, of education, Princeton itself now, human resources now been banned on using the word man because it could be offensive. They said that they released a new alternate to the word man in a recent memo, and this is just crazy. If they use the term average man, they said you can't use that. You have to use average person. If you bring up the topic of man hours, you can't say that. You have to say person hours or work hours. Mankind can no longer be used. You can say humankind. If it's man-made, you can't say that anymore either. You have to say artificial, manufactured, or synthetic. If you say manpower, can't say that either. It has to be personnel, worker, staff, workforce. So it's almost a joke, guys, because if this was happening in another country, I would honestly laugh and be like, that's so overblown. There's no way they're doing this over here. But the fact we see this happening in our current education system and in our college levels now, to the point where everybody is so scared just to offend somebody by using the term man. You can't use the term mankind. You can't use the term man hours or man-made. This is absolutely ludicrous, and it has to stop. We cannot keep putting up with this. The level of political correctness is nauseating. It's to everybody. I brought stuff up with this to all kinds of people with all types of different backgrounds, and even people that are in the gay movement, whatever you want to categorize them as, even they have told me a lot of times that this is complete and total nonsense on what they're trying to do with this, and it's just pushing us further and further and further into that weird unisex place where they don't want anybody to be a man or a woman. They want everybody to be gender neutral, and it makes it easier to have people more controlled that way. So it's pretty crazy. That's why we've talked about before that we probably won't be putting little Hunter into a public school system just for what's going on now. And we see as in California, children now are being denied public education due to the SB 277. We've talked about this repeatedly when it got passed, the vaccine bill. Well, school started this month, and what's happened now is the checkpoint years, the kindergarten and seventh grade, which are specifically addressed in this bill now, are causing significant issues. Of one of the school districts, 1,400 students, 157 of them have been singled out by the school as not having complete vaccine records. What happened is, under the law, students who are entering checkpoint years, kindergarten and seventh grade, are required to provide their full vaccination record. And they said they are hoping students who are sent home would get their shots and return to school. But by the end of the first week, 98 students are still out of school, with 37 of them being kindergartners and 61 of them being seventh graders. Meanwhile, the age of autism reported that 133 students from Elk Grove School District were also not allowed to enroll because they did not have complete vaccination records. Many parents now are opting to homeschool their kids or even move out of the state to avoid being forced to give children risky vaccines. And most people know my topic, my state on this, and our family state on this, and Health Master's business, you know, attitude on this. And this is completely egregious. And I mean, so Lana, what are some things that, you know, you basically, would you feel comfortable as far as if we were putting Hunter in school and they were trying to force him to be vaccinated like this, almost, you know, either you take his school from him or he takes vaccination. Do you think this is fair?
No, it's not. And the problem is that the people that, and not to say that you're ignorant, people aren't stupid, it's just we're not doing our research. As the United States, you know, women are not doing their research. When you do your research from the time you're either thinking about getting pregnant or before you get pregnant or even think about getting pregnant, you need to research all these things. You buy all these clothes, expensive clothes, all these things for your children because you want to give them things. Well, give them health.
Excellent. Well, no, that's exactly right. You bring that point up. Is I've seen parents go out and spend thousands of dollars at these different baby stores on, you know, anything from blankets to clothes to cribs to swings, all this stuff. But yet, the last thing they think about is their children's health. I remember I brought it up on the show a couple months ago about how they sent us those packets of free cans of formula. You remember that?
Oh yeah, formula. Right.
Yeah. And I opened them up, and the second ingredient was corn syrup solids. That was the second ingredient. And I'm looking at it, and I'm puzzled. I really didn't even know how to handle it. I mean, you showed me. You started laughing at me, and I was like, I really don't even know how to respond to this. I said, then it was just an array of other really garbage ingredients on top of that. But I remember what stuck out so much was corn syrup solids, and this was a very well-known brand. And you already know that it was not certified organic. It was not certified non-GMO. I don't even know why they sent them to us. So you know they're putting GMO corn in this to make the corn syrup solids. So you're literally starting your child out from birth with absolute garbage food to feed their body. And this is what's supposed to sustain them, and they're supposed to live off of it. You know, and that's why we always try to promote breastfeeding so much. Obviously, sometimes it happens where, you know, it can't be done as far as the milk may dry up. So we'll have the goat's milk formula that we put together in the train up your children in the way they should eat. And that's a really good formula for most people. But, Lana, explain a little bit why it's so important to really do the best you can to try and breastfeed your child once they're born and try and keep them off formula as much as possible.
Well, the thing is with breastfeeding, your body is equipped to make antibodies for basically keeping them healthy. Your body knows when they're starting, their immune system is weak, and through your breast milk, basically you're giving them all the nutrients that they need to be healthy. And to get that where you start off with a awesome breastfeeding experience, yes, it's going to be uncomfortable, and I understand that a lot of women are like, there's no way it hurts so bad. You know what? Women are a lot stronger than they give themselves credit for. And basically making sure that there's that bonding, which is the golden hour when the baby comes out, you're having that golden hour. That is where the baby learns to latch. When you don't get a good latch, it's really hard to succeed in breastfeeding. So if you start at the beginning, you're going to have a more positive experience, and then you're going to keep your baby and yourself healthy with breastfeeding the child.
Good. Well, yeah, it's definitely important. That's why we try and promote it as much as possible. And like I said, sometimes there's incidences where it's not possible, and that's where the goat's milk formula is a really good option. We've seen really good results from that. And other news, too, now, this is pretty interesting. completely different topic, but I wanted to bring it up today. The U.S. Department of Justice now is stated yesterday that it will no longer be using private prisons to incarcerate federal prisoners, deeming the notorious for-profit facilities less safe and less effective. They said they simply don't provide the same level of correctional services, programs, or resources. No duh, because they're there to make as much money as they can. The memo from Yates instructs officials to either decline to renew private prison contracts upon their expiration or substantially reduce the contract scope. This announcement comes on the heels of a rather scathing report from the DOJ's Inspector General last week, which found the nefarious privately run facilities had a greater number of safety and security incidents than those run by the Federal Bureau of Prisons. They said they had more disturbances, extensive property damage, extensive bodily injury, and deaths of more correctional officers. And as soon as this news broke out that DOJ would be abandoning for-profit prisons, the stock value crashed for both Correction Corporates of America and GEO Group, which I'm extremely happy about. We've talked about this so many times now, and countless groups and media outlets have talked about the crazy stuff that they do as far as, remember, when these for-profit get in a contract, a contractual obligation with the federal government has to supply them with certain amount of prisoners at a certain given time, every month, either every week, every year, depending on what it is. They have a contract with them, and supposedly it has helped save them resources and money from the federal government to contract these prisons out. The problem now is what we've seen for years, actually not now, it's for years, that there's massive countless amounts of abuse, violence, poor conditions, flat-out human rights violations, and much stranger deaths under very worse circumstances, and also, to the promotion of arresting and incarcerating individuals just to get them into the system so they can keep the numbers up for these for-profit prisons. But they said in 2014, the Bureau of Prisons shelled out almost $700 million just to private for-profit prisons in the year 2014. That doesn't even include what these prisons make on all types of other aspects as far as the slave labor that they use and everything else. So what's interesting about this is I'm very excited to see if this actually goes forward. This isn't just a smokescreen, because these for-profit prisons are an absolute nightmare. I've heard this from numerous people, that as far as the living condition, the food, the individuals, the quality, and I'm not saying that you're supposed to be living in a Holiday Inn when you're in prison, especially if you're an extremely habitual violent offender, but what I am saying is everybody has basic human rights that they're entitled to, and a lot of these places do not care about that simply because everything is about bringing it down to the last penny. As long as they can save money on something, they do not care about the quality that anybody inside experiences or really the safety of their officers at all. Now, another story, too. Kentucky pharmacies are now going to start selling naloxone without prescription. I talked about naloxone with incident that happened with my uncle last year, ODing on heroin. It was a very sad incident. Naloxone is basically one of the best medications. It comes basically in a preloaded syringe, something like a EpiPen, and it really helps to completely stop the escalation of heroin or opiate overdose. It's always been a prescription, so it's in hospitals and stuff like that, but it's technically it's not scheduled. So what Kentucky now is, as they've gone and said, we're no longer going to provide this as a prescription. We're going to start offering this at almost 100 Kroger outlets across the state and expanding it further. What it does is it reverses the overdose of opioid drugs and is often administered in emergency rooms. However, Kentucky is one of the five states with the highest opioid overdoses, so a decision was made to quickly and easily make it available for people that needed it. You can't abuse it. There are no addictive properties to it. It doesn't do anything to you if you use it. The decision was announced on Monday this week in hopes of combating over 1,000 deaths per year alone just from opiate overdoses. Within the entire United States, 47,000 deaths were caused by opioid overdoses in 2014. Most of them were as a result of prescription drugs. However, 10,000 of them were a result of heroin. Now, here's why I wanted to bring this up, as I'm glad they're allowing this to be available in Kentucky, because this is a good compound if this happens. But you got to look at these numbers here. Roughly 37,000 opiate overdoses in the United States in 2014, and opiates are Schedule II. This is talking about opiates as in pharma, Oxycontin, oxycodone, Percocet, Vicodin, all those, morphine. Those are Schedule II. They are controlled, but they're completely legal to possess with a prescription drug. 37,000 individuals OD'd on them last year. However, we have the DEA last week stating cannabis has no redeeming property and is extremely addictive, and it's a Scheduled One, which means it's in the same category as methamphetamines and LSD. Yet there has not been one single documented fact in 2014 or a documented case of somebody directly overdosing from cannabis use at all. So you really have to look at the scale of what they're promoting, what the government's allowing, what the FDA's allowing, what the DEA's allowing, because once you start putting these numbers together, you start realizing this is completely and totally nonsense, especially when you find out that the federal government actually owns a patent on cannabis for health research, but yet the DEA still claims it's a Scheduled One and has no health benefits whatsoever. So it's sad to me that we have to start honestly giving naloxone without a prescription in Kentucky because it's so bad. It's sad to me. But on the other hand, too, I'm glad that some people that do have issues with this, it may prevent them from dying if they overdose. So it's pros and cons, but it's really sad in general, though, that this is something that's happening at this level. It really is. And so it is, I mean, it is what it is, but the best thing we can do about it is to remind people, you know, when you are, I mean, because that was the thing, guys. When I was in the hospital with the pericarditis, I was in there for 4 days. They didn't even put me on a morphine drip for the pericarditis. Pericarditis morphine is heart safe. So they put me on straight injectable morphine ampules. They would come in the hospital room between 2 to 3 hours and give me between 2 to 1 milligrams of morphine every time. And I finally started telling them they had to cut back on it. I said, it's helping tremendously. The inflammation's coming down. The pain is not severe from the heart attack, but you got to slow down. I said, I'm going to push it as long as I can. I can't have you guys pumping morphine in me every 2 to 3 hours. I said, it's going to get me way too hooked on this stuff way too fast. I was able to push it out after the first day, about 6 to 8 hours between shots and the IV. But, guys, that's some rough stuff. I mean, it's very, very addictive. I'll tell you guys that right now. It feels good. Morphine's amazing, but it has very, very, very important health benefits if you're in a position where you're trying to get down inflammation and pain management and trying to keep somebody alive in a situation like that. But be very careful, because when you start taking that stuff, the brain starts wanting it. I felt it personally. It was definitely significant. There's no question about it. Your body starts wanting opiates after you get them for a couple of days, especially when it's intravenous. So the biggest thing I had to do was make sure that I kept my mind as strong as possible to not let the pain overwhelm me to the point I had to have it, and I kept pushing it out further and further and further. The same thing when I got home, I didn't even let them give me any type of morphine from the hospital or any type of Tylenol or anything. I had them give me some anti-inflammatories, but I didn't want Oxycontin. I didn't want any of that stuff, so I had to be as careful as I could be with it. And that's what you have to do. And it's really, really easy, guys, to fall in that trap. I've seen so many people, they go in for a surgery, they get hooked on these pills. It's just something you really got to watch out for. And it's, you got to be as strong as you can. You can't give in to that stuff. It has very good properties when you need it. But, man, you got to be careful with this stuff. Speaking of Tylenol, this is an article. We're talking about pregnancy. It fits in right what we're talking about. Instead of amphetamine and Tylenol, which I told them I did not even want, they were going to give me a high-dose prescription of it. I told them no. Causes very adverse side effects. It's extremely liver toxic. We know now that it's also very toxic to pregnant women, and they've come out now and said that roughly 50% of pregnant women use Tylenol at some point while they're pregnant. And according to a study that was just published last week by the JAMA Pediatrics Journal, women who use acetaminophen during their 18 and 32 weeks of pregnancy were more likely to report a number of problematic behaviors when the child reached 7 years of age. In fact, when compared to women who did not use the drug at 18 weeks of pregnancy, the women who took acetaminophen were 42% more likely to note hyperactivity in their children and 31% more likely to note conduct problems. When it comes in acetaminophen use at 32 weeks of pregnant, these women were 39% more likely to report emotional problems than their children at 7 years of age, and 46% to have behavioral issues. So as you can see, the longer the pregnancy goes, when you start taking cetaphedamine or Tylenol, it starts producing more issues. This study was done with about 8,000 mothers in Avon, England. Now, what's interesting about this is another study was done, a Danish study with 64,000 children, which was published in JAMA as well 2 years ago, pointed a direct link between cetaphedamine and severe forms of ADHD known as hyperkinetic disorder. So, guys, be very careful when you're pregnant. I know it's difficult for you guys as far as the pain, sometimes the cramping, all that stuff. But, you know, you have to do the best you can because obviously now you're seeing cetaphedamine is not something that's healthy to take. We have a product that we carry called Salicin, which is a natural painkiller. It's like a Chinese herbal painkiller. Does pretty decent if you're having pains. But remember, when you're pregnant, you need to be taking extra magnesium. You need to be taking all the ultimate prenatals. You need to be taking the turmeric if you need it as far as for inflammation. You know, Lana, when you were pregnant, I know you had an issue with the morning sickness. Yes. So go over a few things that helped you push through that, push through the pain mentally, physically, supplementally, and kind of give people some ideas on that, then let them know there are other options besides using cetaphedamine.
Well, I had morning sickness for, 5 months, something like that, and it was pretty severe. I had to get IV. Mainly what you want to do is stay hydrated. The thing is, when I got the IVs, I talked to the doctor, and he was like, the best way to make sure that you are actually getting the liquid and fluids that you need is think of it this way. If you are watching TV, you know, 10, 15 minutes, you know, at a time, then they have a commercial break. So every 10 to 15 minutes, make sure that you drink like one or two big gulps of water and continuously do that throughout the day so that you stay hydrated. Also, with the whole Tylenol thing, I know that you go to the doctor and you say, oh, I have a headache, I have, you know, this cramp, that cramp. Magnesium is a phenomenal product. Austin knows this. I would wake up with cramps and I would soak my feet in magnesium, and within 20 minutes I was feeling so much better. The oils are really well. They work perfectly. Put them on your legs, whatever you need to do, but magnesium in the prenatals. Even if you're having issues with morning sickness, the times that you have morning sickness the most, try and take them, like the prenatals, after you get through with, you know, being super sick, and take it with food, because that might help, you know, relax your stomach a little bit. Take some crackers. That might help, but stay away from the Tylenol. Stay away.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great information, babe. There's definitely something to be said about that as far as staying away from it. Because, like I said, the more you see all this stuff, the more you start realizing. I mean, you don't have to sit there and be, you know, a conspiracy theory to realize that this is something that's going on significant. This is definitely causing some really big issues as far as in health and long-term effects. And right now, guys, it's more important than ever to be trying to keep yourself healthy and your child healthy while they're in utero. While you're being pregnant, ladies, you have to do the best you can. And I tell people this, I said, it's 9 months. You can do anything for 9 months. Shoot, doggone bodybuilding contest prep is 4 months just to get ready for a show for one day. You know, anybody can do something for 9 months, and it's so important, because I've seen these women that are like, oh, that's too much work. I can't do that. I don't want to stop eating this. I don't want to stop eating that. Really, that 9 months that you're doing this, 9 months, that's it, 9 months, is going to affect this human being that's coming out of you for the next 70 to 80 to 90 years on what you do right now for 9 months. That's it. 9 months. That's it. That's all you have to do it for. After that, breastfeeding is the best option, and it's really best to eat really clean then. But if that's not something you want to engage in, okay, at least do the goat's milk formula. But at least you did your best for the 9 months. You took the right supplements. You ate the right food. You kept your body clean and detoxed out. You didn't let your colon get full. You didn't drink chlorinated and fluoridated water with all the different chemicals in it, the sodas, the coffee, all that stuff. You know, we had a good friend of ours, you know, a little ways back. She was trying to get pregnant, and she couldn't get pregnant. And, you know, we told her, listen, you have to clean your body out. You have to detox. You can't sit there and stuff loads of garbage food like Taco Bell and McDonald's and Slurpees in your body all day and expect your body to have the nutrients and the capability to produce a good, healthy, smart child. It's just not there. It can't happen. Well, I can't. I don't want to say it can't. It can happen, but is it really the best option for you?
It's not a healthy home for the child.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and that's the thing, Lana. Talk about some of the stuff that you ate, because we didn't figure out, you know, this is all new to us, you know, and you started to figure out, you had to dial in your diet super strict because you had some issues with it as well, remember?
Yeah, I definitely did. And the thing is that your body, if you clean out your body knows when there's some type of toxic food that you're eating. I mean, we had organic food, and I decided, oh, you know what? I'm in such a hurry. Let me just, because it was a frozen macaroni and cheese. I know, we're not that healthy.
It was organic,
like,
though.
Right, but it was organic, and I was like, oh, let's hurry up. We got to do stuff. I have a lot of stuff to do today. Let me just thaw it out in the microwave for 30 seconds. Yeah, that didn't work out very well. Ate the macaroni and cheese and vomited all the macaroni and cheese. My body knew it was toxic. It had gone through the microwave, and that messed up the molecular structure of the soup. So that wasn't good at all. And also, this whole thing that women are, I'm eating for two, no. You need to up your, if you're hungry and you need to up your calories, eat clean calories. Not, oh, I need a milkshake, I need french fries, I need to go eat a nasty hamburger. No, don't do all that. 9 months, like Austin said, only 9 months to prepare this child for the world and make sure the baby is in the best, like, home environment in your stomach. That's his home environment. So what you eat, the baby eats as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great tip, guys, that we did for Lana a few times, you know, when she wasn't feeling good as far as, you know, nausea or stuff like that, when she could start really trying to get some more food down, if you guys start craving a lot of these sweets or sugars or junk food, make a Fit Food banana milkshake. I've done this numerous times, and they taste great. You can either take the vanilla or the chocolate Fit Food. Both of them are the cleanest whey you're going to find in the world. They're out of New Zealand. You guys already know that if you listen to us, our Fit Food protein. Take about 8 to 10 ounces of organic goat's milk, organic cow's milk. Put that in with about another 2 cups of ice and about 2 to 3 frozen bananas. And you can throw in some organic almond butter in there as well. Anything else clean that you want to throw that. But that generally right there.
The living fuel, too. If you can, just the living fuel is really good, too.
If you can afford the living fuel, you can throw that in as well. So, I mean, it depends on your budget, what you're trying to do, but you can make a really good chocolate or vanilla banana milkshake out of what I just told you guys, and it's really easy to make, it's really easy to drink, it tastes delicious, it will keep your weight up if you're having an issue holding weight or gaining weight while you're pregnant, and you get all these really good high nutrient density calories in there without putting just a bunch of garbage, like going and getting a Frosty or some type of just dog poo food like that at Wendy's or McDonald's. You just stay away from that stuff. If you guys look at the ingredients, I used to eat at Chick-fil-A years ago. When I was in college, I used to like Chick-fil-A a lot. I was still moderately strict on my diet when I was in college, but I was in college, so I wasn't super strict like I am now. And I used to eat at Chick-fil-A a lot. And then one day I drank one of their chocolate milkshakes, and it tasted really good, actually. And I noticed I got a real bad headache about 30 minutes after I drank it. And I knew enough about my blood sugar and how I felt, and I was like, man, I'm like, Chick-fil-A is supposedly all, you know, decent food. They claim that, this and that. I don't know, guys. Do some research on Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is a decent company. They have good Christian values. I respect what they stand for, but their quality of food is not what everybody thinks it is. Look up the ingredient list on their chocolate milkshake. A, they use high-fructose corn syrup. They don't even use real cane syrup or, you know, dehydrated cane juice. They use high-fructose corn syrup. They use multiple chemicals and stabilizers to keep it thick. And then on top of that, they don't even want to use good enough cocoa powder to turn your shake brown. They use red food coloring in it to give it that nice brown chocolate look. If you guys take one of our cans of food, our Fit Food in the back, we use organic Dutch cocoa in our Fit Food. You make your shake, it's dark. It looks like a chocolate milkshake. You don't have to question what flavor it is because of how clean it is. You should not have to put food coloring in a chocolate milkshake to make it look appeasing. That tells me that they're using so many types of stabilizers, chemicals, and artificial flavors that the thing probably looks like some type of oil sludge that comes out of your drain pan whenever you change your oil, that it's so nasty, nobody wants to drink it, so they have to add food coloring to it to make it look decent. That's pathetic, guys, especially when you're paying $3, $4, $5 for a milkshake. That's completely unacceptable to me. And this is a lot of stuff that we found out, and that's why Lana had to be so strict on what she was doing with everything as far as how she was eating. Now, Lana, that's the thing. We pretty much stopped going out to eat at all, unless the only place we did really well that I still ate a lot, I still like to eat, is Chipotle's. But you had one little incident, Chipotle's once, because of the morning sickness that kind of ruined that.
Yep.
So it is what it is, but you get past stuff. But, you know, Chipotle's is clean. I just ate there the other day. As long as you stay away from the sour cream and cheese, you actually have a pretty clean meal. I usually have them add extra beans and then a good amount of brown rice, and I usually get extra meat if I'm trying to bump the protein content up. Well, Lana, what are some other articles right now you want to go into, since we have we got a little bit more time to go into detail on this?
Well, one thing I would like to address is the first hour after the baby is born. It's called the golden hour. I had no idea about a lot of the baby stuff, honestly, before I became pregnant with Hunter. And so I did a lot of research, and the first 60 minutes are very important for bonding time with the mother and the baby. This basically helps with the breastfeeding and making sure that the baby has a good lap. You want to be skin to skin with the child. And my thing is that a lot of times when you have a baby at the hospital, and I've had friends that have had babies at the hospital, the first thing they want to do is grab the baby. We need to weigh the baby. You need to do the footprint of the baby. You need to do all the stuff. No, it's really not necessary. They can wait. And women need to voice their opinion. This is their child. And they need to take authority and say, no, this is what I'd like to do. So that you have that good bonding, so that you have good experience with breastfeeding child. Because remember, once you leave the hospital or the birthing center or wherever you have your baby, you're the one that has to live with that child. So make it a good experience from the first moment the baby is born. We also, when me and Austin had Hunter, we waited to cut the umbilical cord. The reason for that is one-third of the blood of the baby is still in the placenta. So if you wait till the blood in the cord starts kind of getting, it gets flat, it quits pulsing, then cut the umbilical cord. And they can do that again at the hospital, but a lot of times they just cut it right away. We waited that. So that he would have most of the blood in his body, so he wouldn't have to deal with any anemic issues. And a lot of times they don't show up right at the beginning. They show up later down the road, like a few months old, and then you have problems with being anemic. And also having that skin-to-skin contact with mother and child to also help regulate the temperature of the baby. That helps also with their blood sugar levels. I don't know if I mentioned this yet or not, but a lot of times at the hospital, they will actually give the baby sugar water.
Yep.
And I didn't realize what they were doing, but I have been doing some research on the sugar water. Basically, it's supposed to help them with the pain of vaccine, going back to the whole vaccination thing. When you're breastfeeding, your baby is going to be immune to all the things that you're immune to. And so the thing is, try to do what's best for your child when they're born. Do your research. You don't have to take my word, anybody's word for it. Do your own research. I definitely advise people to do that, because even stuff that we can tell, you can always learn more. There's always more things to learn. Another thing that we could talk about too, Austin, would be bathing a child. It's not really necessary to bathe a child immediately after they're born. The white, the vernix on a baby, which most babies will have a little bit of the white, like material around their body when they come out. Ones that are more on the 42 week, pushing 42 weeks, they don't have as much. Younger babies or even premature babies see a lot more of this. What you want to do with that is rub it on the skin. It's actually one of the best and world's best moisturizer for the baby. It's like a lotion. Is there anything else you want to add to that, Austin, about the vernix?
Oh, no, you know this stuff pretty well. That's why I was letting you kind of take the floor for a minute. I figured you you had some pretty good info here.
Okay. All right. Well, so we did not bathe Hunter for the first, like, week. I mean, obviously, if he had a blowout or whatever, we would clean him up, dab him off. But there was no reason to, you know, submerge him and clean him and soap him off, because babies are not born dirty. They're clean, and when you have them, God has designed a baby. You can have a baby, and they are ready to go. They have everything they possibly need. So that's another thing I would recommend people researching the vernix and the benefits of the vernix before having a child. What else can you think of that we can also cover about the golden hour, Austin?
Well, also, too, being mentally prepared for it and having guidelines and set ideas of how you want it handled before the situation arises. This is one of the reasons why we went and had it at a midwife, because they're very open about what you want to do, how you want to have your baby. Because remember, guys, this is your child. Regardless of how the hospital wants to make you think that they're in control of it, they don't know what they're doing either. They're just having another routine baby. They don't know. I mean, it's childbirth. They're just doing what they normally do. But they always, when you go to the hospital, they immediately make you think that you're a dummy. And that, oh, if you don't follow us, then you're basically going to die. Everybody's going to die if you don't listen to us. That's their attitude. So people have to realize that you do have a choice. It's a very, very natural process. This is not a difficult thing to do. You may not know what you're doing, but it's not something that's just, you know, absolute pure astronomical rocket science that you're not prepared for. You need to get all your ducks in a row, figure out how you want to handle it, and have basic guidelines of what you want to do before, during, and after the pregnancy. And you need to stick with them, because once the pregnancy starts, emotions start to go. People get tired. People get worn out. People get frustrated. These things happen. It's normal. So you need to kind of have a set point of standards that you're going to follow as far as who you want in there, who you don't want in there, what do you have the doctors to do, the midwives to do, vaccines, all this stuff. Because if you don't, you'll basically be much more apt to be pressured into something that you may not want to do, or do something that you wouldn't have done normally. That's one of the biggest issues I have with the hospitals, are the massive influx of C-sections that they started doing over the last 10 to 15 years because of the speediness of them, and it's easier to schedule, it's easier to control, and it's, quite frankly, it's easier to do because you can set it up, boom, they're in and out in 30 minutes. The problem is what Lana was just saying, and now, granted, I understand there's medical complications, and C-sections are life-saving for that. They absolutely are, and I've seen them be life-saving. But I would dare to say, from what I've personally seen with people I know, friends, and people I've worked with in the office, 60 to 70% of the C-sections that happen are completely unnecessary because the doctors don't want to wait anymore. They don't have time. They have to go play their golf game. They got to go meet their other girlfriend or their wife or whatever they do on the weekends. I don't know. They have to go do this. So they do not want to be held up for 6, 7, 8 hours. Why you, God forbid, have your child naturally in the way that you want to have it. It's much easier for them to put you under anesthesia, open you up, pull the baby out, staple you back up, call it a day. They still get the same amount of money. Actually, they get more because they can get kickbacks from the anesthesiologist, and they do an operation and everything else, and it's done. It's 30 minutes, and it's over with. So be very cautious of that because we've seen this happen numerous times. I've talked about it before on friends of ours that happened, and if you're not moving fast enough, if you're not doing what they tell you to do, they immediately prep you for surgery. And at that point, they scare you because they basically make you think if you don't get a C-section, everybody's going to die, like I said before. And that's what they do. So understand your rights, understand what you want to do, and understand what's going on. It's very scary your first time when you're having a kid, especially for the woman, because you don't know what to expect. You're kind of there. So, I mean, any thoughts on that, Lana, as far as choosing a midwife, hospital? I mean,
well,
any other tips?
I mean, well, let's go back to before. Once we found out we were pregnant with Hunter, I was very nervous. Like, most first-time moms, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is going to be so painful. And I was like, oh, I definitely, like, I didn't even think twice. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to have this baby at a hospital. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? They don't really, once I started researching stuff, I was like, you know what? They don't really stand for everything that I want to do. Am I going to be comfortable in a hospital setting? Probably not. If there is an emergency, then by all means, or you are extremely high risk for something, by all means, you're, you know, the hospital is basically going to be a good choice. But for us, you know, I was like, okay, well, let's try different things. Let's make phone calls. Let's go look at the place. And we ended up at a birth center because, one, I was afraid to have a home birth because it's my first one. You don't know what to expect because no matter what anyone tells you, I mean, everybody's experience is completely different. And also, not only, like, with your mind, prepare yourself from the beginning. Hey, this is going to be, you know, this is not going to be a comfortable, you know, process, but it's totally worth it, and I can do this. God has designed my body to do this. I can definitely do this. And also, have your, you know, your husband or your partner be encouraging. Keep them in the loop with what want. With me and Austin, I was doing a lot of research. He was busy here at the office doing, you know, the podcast and just overall just doing everything here in the office to make sure everything was ran correctly and smoothly. And so I would research, and then at night I would say, hey, let me, you know, explain all the stuff that I've done research on, and let's make sure that we're on the same page. It really helped because when I told Austin about the golden hour, and I was like, basically, I want the first hour with me and the baby in the spin. And his reaction was like, what? And I was like, yes, because, and I gave him a list of the benefits. And he was like, wow, okay. Like, he really understood. But because I explained to him why I wanted to do certain things. Because otherwise, he wouldn't know. I would be on one page, and she would be on another, and we go to have the baby, and we're on separate pages. That's not going to be a very calm setting to be in, because your emotions are extremely different when you are having the baby. But being emotionally and physically and spiritually prepared when you go into labor is going to help the process go extremely smooth. And don't be stressed out. Being stressed out and scared actually causes the pregnancy to go a lot slower. So you want to stay as relaxed as possible. And we went to a class, and the mock class, I think they still have those, I'm not sure, about the breathing technique. We really didn't learn any of that in our class at all. But basically, low moans, low tones will help relax the muscles. High-pitched screaming and all of that actually slows down the process of having the baby. Another thing I would actually like to address is delivering the baby on your back. A lot of hospitals, everybody's like, oh, yeah, you deliver on your back. Why do people deliver on the back? That's the question. Why are people delivering on their back? When you're basically, your tailbone is going up. When you're laying on your back, your tailbone is going up. So that's twice the amount of energy that a woman is going to have to push, because you're pushing the baby up at an incline. So it's really important that you discuss, even if you decide that you want to have yours at a hospital, discuss all this with your doctors so that they know, hey, I don't want to deliver on my back. I want to deliver on my side. I want to be sitting. I want to do this. Remember, this is your birth. They're getting paid to do what you want and to make sure everybody's okay and healthy. So basically, communication. You want to make sure that you communicate, because it's going to make the process go a lot easier and you're going to be prepared.
Yes, absolutely. There's no question about that. Everything, like I said, getting prepped the best you can is definitely one of the best ways to do all of that, and not just, you know, letting fear overcome you and being scared about it, but being able to be readily available on everything that's going on and be very open to everything that's going on as well. Do you got any other articles or tips you want to discuss today, babe?
I don't think so. Oh, I do want to talk about one thing. It doesn't necessarily have to do with babies, but it has to do with children.
Okay.
Babies, basically, from birth to 24 months, researchers have found that babies are eating more foods that are processed starchy foods, like sugary drinks and sweets. I mean, little babies. This is birth to 2 years old. And actually, an unbalanced eating habit usually develop as early as 9 months for a child. So at 9 months, because most children, and some don't, most children, their parents start feeding them, you know, the baby foods around 6 months, which is perfectly normal. That's fine. But let's really look at the stuff that we're letting our, like, children. By year, like 1 year of age, kids are usually consuming adult levels of sodium and added sugar. And that little tiny body that's 1 year old, 12 months, is eating the same amount of levels of sodium and added sugar. That is ridiculous. We really need, as moms, as dads, as friends, we really need to pay attention to what we are consuming, because the child is watching what you're eating. And also, feed your baby good food. Like I said, you're buying this child all these expensive shoes. Oh, we need this accessory. Oh, I need the new iPhone. I need the new Galaxy. No. pay extra money and eat quality food. It's very important. Otherwise, we're going to have serious, like, more issues than we already have now with people's health.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's funny, I was in a store the other day talking to one of the people that own it, one of our friend's stores here in Auburndale. And the girl was telling me, because I was kind of talking to her about the same thing we're discussing right now, because she's thinking about having a kid with her husband. And we were going into detail and some stuff. And she goes, yeah, she goes, it's crazy to me what I see when moms come in here to shop with what their kids eat. She goes, the other day a mom came in with like probably a two-year-old, two-and-a-half-year-old, and he was drinking a full-size Red Bull. And mom told him to sit down and basically drink his Red Bull, and he sat there and drank it. And, you know, my friend basically asked her, she's like, is he okay to drink that? Like, and she goes, oh, yeah, he loves those. Those are, like, his favorite sports drink. She goes, sports drink? A Red Bull. It's full of maltodextrin, glucose, sugar, caffeine, you name it. She goes, oh, yeah, well, it's okay. You know, he doesn't drink them all the time. I'm sitting there thinking, what's all the time? A two-year-old? How many Red Bulls does a two-year-old have to eat? And, I mean, it's sad. I mean, you see this happening all the time. So, I mean, what's the best way, you think, Lana, to kind of wake some of these people up when you see this without really offending them, but trying to give them at least a heads up, like, hey, maybe that's not a good idea to put your two-year-old on Red Bull?
I mean, just basically, we need to educate more people and educate your friends. It all starts there. Me and Austin have different friends from different walks of life. Everybody is all over the place. And to be an example, one, that's going to show a lot more than you saying stuff.
Yep.
Because people are going to be like, hey, why do you do that? Or why do you do this? Why do you do baby massage on your baby? Why do you do, you know, why do you feed them this? Because it's good. This is the benefits of it. And tell people that. The thing is, baby food is not created equally. It's very important to read the labels on the back. Even organic non-GMO foods are, they're good, but the thing is, you have to read the labels on the back. Food that is more vibrant in color is probably going to have more nutrients, but make sure it's organic non-GMO. And make sure the baby food doesn't have added water. I've seen that sometimes. I go to the store and I'll just be like, oh, I wonder what this has in it because it's organic. And I look and it has added water. Why does the food need added water? Make sure that your food is good. The best way to do it, and I know that it takes more time, would be to make your own food. Make your own baby food. Then you can see what type of food your child likes, and also don't be afraid to add in a little bit of herbs or spices. The more exciting and like flavor the food has, the more likely the baby will eat it. I mean, if you eat bland something, you're not really going to like it. It's not going to make an impression to want to eat it. So make the food fun. Make it like very flavorful so that the baby wants to eat the food. Also, you can also mix breast milk in with some of the foods when you're starting to transition your child into eating more of the solid foods. Like with avocado, you can put breast milk, different things. We haven't gotten that far yet with Hunter, but I'm already starting to prep different things that I want to make for him. But just, I mean, really look at real foods. You want real food for your baby. You don't want any of this sugar, high sodium type of mess that, you know, you give your child. I mean, because childhood obesity is an epidemic right now. And your child's eating habits are starting to develop at 9 months of age. So if you sit there and give them a rice cereal, which a lot of parents do, and I'm not judging because I understand that, you know, people are in a hurry, whatever, they just grab something and go. But really prep, food prep. You know, take a day or so and get prepped for the week. So so that you're not one of those parents that you're driving down the road and you're like shoving French fries and cookies down their throat. Oh yeah, have this. This is okay. No, teach them now, because what you teach them now, they will do when they're older. I mean, Austin, I mean, you're a prime example. Your parents fed you really well all your life, and you are still doing that. And you educated. When me and Austin met, I wasn't the most healthiest person. I was healthy, but I was not that healthy. I didn't understand all of the organic things. So he educated me, even while we were friends, just because I watched what he was doing. So, I mean, what you do speaks a lot to someone else, even friends, family, people that you don't know.
Yeah.
So be a good influence.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. You nailed it on the head. You got to lead by example, and that's what we've tried to do here at HealthMasters.com. As you know, we practice what we preach. We take these supplements. We eat like this. We train like this. We do what we have to do to make it happen, because you can't sit there and expect people to take you seriously about your health if they come in the office and you're sitting in there eating a triple cheeseburger from McDonald's with a Slurpee, you know, on the side, and expecting them to be like, oh, hey, you need to stop eating this, you need to stop eating that, you need to listen to me. It's just simple as that. You know, I was an anomaly when I was younger because of the way that mom and dad raised me as far as my diet. I was pretty, you know, health conscious back when I was a younger kid. I wasn't weird or crazy about it, but I just didn't do certain things. Like, I'd never drank sodas. You know, I really didn't eat a lot of fast food. Granted, I'd had a cheeseburger here and there, but one big thing that was always separated me apart is I never drank sodas. And my body was so clean with that I tried them a few times, and they absolutely wrecked my blood sugar for the rest of the day. Wrecked it. My body was not used to taking in 50 to 60 to 70 grams of high fructose corn syrup in one drink like that and processing it. That's why I was so healthy. I had so much energy. I never got sick, and I did great in pretty much every sport I tried and excelled in, was because my body was that clean. And so you see these kids that are drinking this stuff on a regular basis. You can't be surprised. But guys, I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm glad I got to have Lan on today to bring some topics up. If you guys need anything, email us. Call us, healthmasters.com. Again, Excellent C is on sale for the whole weekend. It's over 10% off. Really popular product. Great product. Take it every day. Also, too, the TED CD set for the Eat, Drink, and Be Health series, over $200. I think we still have a few of those left in stock. That'll be going through the weekend. If we run out of stock, we'll substitute it with the Maximum Success or something else. You guys can put that in the comment box if you want to. But we appreciate it, guys. We thank you for everything. You guys have a blessed night, a safe weekend, and we will be back with you guys again on Monday.